and welcome to episode 51 of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. I am Patrick Macias, the author of Tokyo Scope blog.
And I am Matt Ault, the author of Pure Invention, the book and the newsletter. I don't blog, Patrick. I newsletter, because that's what classy mofos like me do.
It's a blog. It's a newsletter. It's a newsletter. It's a blog.
It's a floor wax and a dessert topping. Yes, exactly. In keeping with the 40-year-old comedy references, because this is the 51st episode. Yes, it is a newsletter. It expands on topics from Pure Invention that you might have read and loved, but wanted to read more about. Tune into blog. It actually does not have that in the title. blog.pureinventionbook.com.
Yeah, we're bloggers now, or we're newsletterers now. I don't know how to say this, but yes, I guess you started a little while back. I started, I guess it'll be like 3 weeks by the time this episode airs, and it's a lot of fun. I should have an interview up with Lolita fashion icon Rin Rin Doll this week, if all goes well. So
wow.
That'll be very kawaii for everyone.
That's cool. No, it's really the way of the world these days. Like, newsletters are so much a better way to get the word out than like trying to place articles in like these, you know, crappy mainstream. Did I just say crappy? I meant mainstream media outlets, much as I love them. So
how about like angry Reddit threads going, no, it's not. No, it isn't. No, it's not.
Angry any... Well, it's a nice way to get out of social media in general. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, is there any like pleasant social media place to congregate? I'm not aware of one. Maybe you do.
Mixi, is that a viable option?
Check out my MySpace.
Are you on Threads yet? Are you a big fan of that British nuclear war movie, Threads?
I downloaded it because basically everybody who's on Instagram is getting on-ramped onto it. And it's basically Instagram minus the pictures, as far as I can tell. So I don't really have high hopes for it. You know, everything cool about the internet was made by nerds, like in their parents' basement or their garage. And somehow we kind of forgot about that over the last couple of decades. And I just don't think the next cool thing is going to come out of a big company. I think it's something we haven't seen yet. It's probably going to be some weirdo, you know, code something that nobody's even looking at right now, and that's going to take off. I hope so, because I want to make the internet weird again.
Yeah, weren't you named after a news group, Rec Arts Anime Alt Misc or Alt Horror Movies or something like that?
Exactly, yes. No, my parents named me after the key on the keyboard, the Alt key. Every time you press that, by the way, my family gets like a nickel.
Is that like an alternative lifestyle?
Yes. If loving kaiju is wrong, then find me guilty.
So just to catch up with you, what's been going on lately? I haven't seen you in a while since you got back from that certain country that shall remain nameless.
Yes. Hiroko and I took a whirlwind tour of the state, saw family, went to a wedding, spent a week in the North Cascades National Park up in Washington State, which is really cool.
What did you do as soon as you got back in Tokyo? Did you like start kissing the ground like a soldier back from Nam or something like that?
I filled my bathtub with natto and jumped in. Wait a second. Did I say that or just think it?
Did you go on the internet and complain that Tokyo is a slum and there's like airplanes, you know, flying over your apartment?
I called my congressman and tried to get them to divert flight paths over the entire city just because I found it annoying. No, I have to say, I think just after 20 years here, I've gotten like super adjusted to Japanese food. And after 3 weeks of nothing but like burgers, basically what I realized is every restaurant in the States, you only have a choice of three things, like some meat dish, a sandwich, or pasta. And that's basically it over and over again, unless you go to a, you know, a quote unquote ethnic restaurant that is, you know, outside of the boundaries of American food, which we tried to as much as we could, but it's tough when you're traveling. So it was, you know, as much as I love me a good sandwich, as much as I love pasta and chunks of meat, it was nice to get back to Japan and eat kind of light again.
Like tonkatsu and okonomiyaki.
Just dig right into abura soba, like that, what is it, oil ramen? I find abura soba, which is like the big thing, and it has been the big thing in Tokyo for a while, actually lighter than a lot of the broth based ramen stuff. So it's not good for you though. It's probably like my arteries are probably like a millimeter, you know, diameter now. No blood getting through at all because they're so clogged from the oil. But I regret nothing, Patrick.
And have you been to Knockin' on Broadway lately? I haven't left my house like in weeks because I'm like trying to like beat the heat. It's just, you know, all I can do is just go outside for a few minutes to avoid melting and like get some gari gari popsicles.
I know, because I feel like you're interviewing me here. Yes, yes, I did go to Knockin' on Broadway. I went to Knockin' on Broadway to check out Takashi Murakami's Invader Room Cafe Zinguro, which I wrote about in my newsletter. Please check it out. But it's, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Murakami Takashi. Takahashi's art particularly, but it's weird. We certainly share a kind of artistic sensibility. If I had $1 million, I would probably build a Showa era arcade in my space too.
Yeah, what's better, his art or his coffee, Matt? Have you asked him?
I'll tell you what's not better is the fact they're charging 500 yen a play. 500 yen to play Xevious, dude.
Wait, a play. Are you kidding?
No. It's like, it's a great place to hang out, but they're like, are you sure you don't want to play? And I'm like, yes, I don't want to play Space Invaders for that I can play for free on my browser. I don't want to give you 500 yen for no reason other than you just arbitrarily set the price to this. Thank you.
Is this why French people are like blowing up the city and like setting fire to things?
You have to pay for these tokens too. It's like Chuck E. Cheese, except last time I checked, which admittedly was some time ago, Chuck E. Cheese tokens were 25 cents for a token. They weren't like, there wasn't some kind of like FX trading, some like cryptocurrency thing going on where like you had to pay double just play a video game. This isn't even double. What is it? You do the math. What is 25 cents? It's like 20 times. God.
Typical arcade game in Tokyo right now is like 100 yen or 200 yen if it's like a fancy new game.
Definitely. Well, games were always 100 yen here. I remember being shocked about that when I first came in the early 90s. And I'm like, 100 yen, you know, because we basically were on the quarter system, you know, the quarter muncher system. And when you saw like in the 80s or late 80s, I guess 50 yen games started coming around and you'd see those and be like, WTF, 50 cents? But Japan was always 100 yen. And now apparently it's 500 if you're gaming with Takahashi, quote unquote, super flat Murakami.
Yeah, I'd like to super flatten his face over those prices.
You should join me next time. Join me at Nakano Broadway. Here, nobody's there on a weekend. There's certainly no tourists there. You're going to go to Akihabara? Did you hear? It's the electronics district, Patrick. I'm actually borderline interested to go check out a maid cafe because they're still out there hawking on the streets. And like, I think it would be a really interesting look into a fat... It's like, imagine a discotheque still operating in the 90s. You know what I mean? This fad has completely faded. Nobody's even talking about maid cafes anymore. Yet there seems to be this like bunny-eared girl on every corner in Akihabara beckoning you to get your ears cleaned or whatever it is.
Yeah, the thing about visiting here is it's probably like a unique experience. But if you live in Japan, like you can have an awkward experience everywhere you go, like every interaction versus like paying for it. Paying for like the awkward experience with a girl dressed like a maid.
Well, it was interesting. There is this toy collector bulletin board system called Skull Brain, and I'm not actually a member of it, but a friend of mine is and often kicks me threads. And there was one in there recently about somebody saying, you know, Nakano Broadway Mandarake is dead, man. Like there's nothing to get there anymore. And I was like, it's always been. If you go there like once a week, you see how little the stuff changes there. The whole point of going to Nakano Broadway is to soak in, you know, the weirdness and like realize that other freaks like you exist and that there are stores catering to us. It's not to actually buy anything. I think the last time anybody quote unquote scored anything at Mandarake was like around 2003. It's just everything goes to auction now, you know?
Did you score, Matt?
I went into the bathroom. There was a stall in the bathroom and I scored a illicit Chogokin, I guess it was. Hey, kid, you want some Chogokin? My only vice is zinc diecast, Patrick. You know that. So anyway, yeah, it is hot out there. It is hot as Mazinger's breast fire, I think you might say.
Then we should cool down with a commercial and cut to our feature attraction.
Shogun Japanese Grill and Sushi Bar. Why do people come? Excitement. Our incredible chefs prepare the food right at your table. The food, including teppanyaki, sushi, and over 60 classic and signature rolls. Libations, we have a full bar, a wonderful wine list, and try our sake experience. Shogun Japanese Grill and Sushi Bar, Highway 105 West in Conroe. People come for the fun.
Patrick, I'd like to talk about something that's affecting all of us. We're getting older. Have you noticed this?
I sure have. Yeah. Couldn't help but notice.
I feel like a 15-year-old trapped in a 49-year-old's body, but it's just a fact, you know?
Are we old taku, Matt?
We are old taku, and that is actually the thing I would like to talk about on this episode. Like, Japanese pop culture that we love and everybody loves is, let's be brutally honest, primarily a youth-oriented culture. Would you agree with this?
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
I'm talking, when you, it's like, obviously Kurosawa movies, like there's a lot, when you talk about cool Japan, when you talk about what's cool about Japan, there are many things that are not youth oriented. Like, I don't think like Zen rock gardens are youth oriented, or like, you know, traditional Japanese culture or yokai culture or anything like that. There's lots of really awesome stuff. But when we talk about anime and manga, they have traditionally been really youth, like angsty teen, you know, they might be mature or more so than the stuff we grew up on in the West, the kind of floppy comic books we grew up on in the West, but they're generally youth oriented. We're getting old. We still love this stuff. What do you do? How do you still, do you find any conundrums in still continuing to consume youth culture from your, you know, your own misbegotten youth, even as an adult?
I personally don't. But I think I've become like a bigger fan and a follower of trends within the industry rather than the content itself. Does that make sense? I don't need to watch every single episode of the hit new show, but I, at least for the work I do have to have kind of an awareness of what the show is, who the players are, and what it's doing in terms of generating fan response.
Well, it's a fire hose, right? There's so much new stuff coming out all the time that would be impossible to keep up with it. When I was a kid in the 80s, like if it was anime, I watched it. Like, that's probably the biggest difference between then and now for me. Like, oh, an anime, I'll watch it, you know? So like, whether it's Macross the movie or like Maison Ikkoku or something like that, two totally, you know, different sorts of things, I'd be like, it's anime, I gotta watch it. Now I don't feel that at all anymore.
You don't feel obligated to just check everything out because there's like 40 new shows every 3 to 4 months.
Well, I did some, I was writing about this in one of my earlier newsletter posts. Like, there's something, like, there's an insane amount, like tens of thousands of hours of anime are produced every year. Like, I don't think it would be physically possible, even if you were so inclined to watch all of it. And that's been the case for a really long time. But, you know, when you think about this, there's also a kind of shifts in the type of content that's being made, right? Because, you know, young people obviously have different concerns and interests than we did, you know, 40 years later, big surprise, like, you know, tastes change. So I think a big part of this is also driven by the fact there's like different, you know, generations of otaku. Let's just put aside Japan for a second. How would you categorize the kind of rise of Japanese pop culture fans in the States? For me, I guess it would start with the CFO, the Cartoon Fantasy Organization. Would you like late 70s, early 80s? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that sounds about right for the first generation, sure. People like doing tape trading, or like guys like Fred Patton and the CFO, like, you know, this conspiracy to get people to watch Japanese animation at the Star Trek convention.
Yeah, it was kind of like evangelical. Wouldn't you agree with that? Like that, my strongest memory of those early 80s conventions I went to was like, have you seen this? Like, people would really kind of be like the pusher man. They'd be pushing it on you. What is it? Were you actually a member of the CFO? They didn't have a chapter in like the Washington, D.C. area where I grew up.
There was kind of a anime love shack in Sacramento. I don't think they were officially part of the CFO, but they were CFO adjacent. And all the really weird, scary neighborhood otaku would go there maybe once a month and sit in a like a plaid Brady Bunch style sofa and watch whatever we had. And some people would peddle some goods, you know, some PCP, some smack, some horse. And no, it wasn't like that. But I mean, it was really, really early days. And that's what you did, is you just sat on a sofa. Porky Pig in it. Is that what they call it when you're just wearing a shirt and no pants and watch cartoons from another country?
It's funny you bring up Porky Pig, a cartoon character, because I just actually did a quick search for CFO online. And the very first thing that comes up is a furry website. I guess the CFO is really deeply connected to furry culture too?
Because of Fred Patton. There's a lot of links between them, yeah. But Fred always kind of blamed Tezuka. He said because Tezuka thought Kimba was sexy.
Tezuka was obsessed with anthropomorphic animals. And I remember having a conversation with Tomohiro Machiyama, who was your co-author on the Otaku in USA books and was a big commentator on Japanese pop culture. And he was just basically saying that he thinks the movie Bambi completely just twisted that guy's mind. He was obsessed with the Twitter-pated scene where like all the animals are like going through puberty and like having all of this kind of like sexy interactions. Yeah, it's like a hookup culture. It's like Netflix and chill, you know, like, but in the forest with anthropomorphic animals. And somehow that deeply imprinted on Tezuka's soul. And apparently like Fred Patton and a lot of other people's.
Because for us, it was Orotsuki Doji. The things that imprinted on us were slightly different than Walt Disney cartoons.
So anyway, we're kind of off track here. So CFO was that kind of early 80s evangelical kind of thing. What came next? like, to me, it's like those 90s, like when anime finally started to be broadcast on TV and you had like Toonami and those like blocks of anime and like you could watch Sailor Moon on TV or like, you know, God forbid, Cowboy Bebop.
It's kind of a cable and kind of home video market. Yes. Had been established by the 90s. And that was creating a new generation of fans. I was working at Viz back then and like, you know, there were a lot of people reading magazines like Animerica and going to Suncoast Video and stuff like that. But it was still really niche. Like you kind of had to know what time to tune in or like where to go to get the hookup, but it was available if you want. It was a cult thing.
Yeah. Cause you know, in the 80s, you really had to like tape trade. I mean, I know Robotech and like Voltron and stuff like that were on TV, but you really, if you wanted the deep cuts, you had to tape trade and like.
You had to meet a guy in a parking lot, like in the middle of the night.
Like literally, you got what I need? But by the 90s, like they're showing Gundam on TV. Like I would have thought I'd died and gone to heaven if they were showing even Gundam Wing when I was a kid. I literally couldn't see it. Like people weren't even tape trading it because it was so tough to get episodes of Gundam and stuff back then.
Well, I remember working at Viz back then, like the average anime manga fan was like someone like in their late teens, like early 20s. Okay. And then after Gundam Wing, they got a lot younger. They began to be like 13-year-olds for it. Like it really brought in a lot of kids. It brought in a lot of like fresh blood.
And that's part of this too. Like if you were in this from the 80s and suddenly you're in a room full of 13-year-olds, well, that's kind of weird, right? Like, you know, I guess, but now that's the internet. Like everybody's in a room full of 13-year-olds, literal ones and metaphorical ones all at the same time. But yeah, I remember like one of the last conventions I went to in the States, like in the early, I think it was like early 90s. Even by that point, I was feeling like I kind of aged out of it a little bit. Not out of the content so much, but out of the fandom. And I think that's, for me, as an old otaku, like the biggest difference between when I was a kid and now, which is that like I'm not really interested in the fandom at all. I'm not really interested in like discoursing with other like fans. I just like watching the stuff I like to watch, whether it's old or whether it's new.
No, but wait, Matt, the last time I saw you, you had a t-shirt that said Glomp Me and you had a yaoi paddle. Is that what they call those?
I was doing, I'm still reading this cartoon fantasy organization. Was I doing a impromptu fur meet? That is what I was saying. But anyway, yes. So Japan actually has been going through this crisis of faith for a lot longer than us, which makes sense because they've had a like a kind of, you know, dedicated adult fandom for longer than us. Like the Japanese hardcore otaku anime fan kind of scene started in the mid to late 1970s, you know, probably a good 5 to almost 10 years before it did in the States. And, you know, it was kicked off by, you know, the fact that Japanese kids had grown up. There was a generation of kids who had grown up on anime on TV and then were like refusing to graduate from it as kids. But they went through like kind of a similar sort of arc as us. And this is really interesting because there's a super otaku named Toshio Okada. Do you know him?
Oh, I know Toshio Okada, ex-Gainax, right?
Yeah, he's one of the founding members of Gainax. He actually wrote Toppo Nerai Gunbuster and produced a lot of Gainax's early stuff. And he became really famous in the early aughts for he was pretty overweight. And then he wrote this book, like, You Don't Have to Be Fat Forever, that became like a massive bestseller in Japan.
Published in English as Sayonara Mr. Fatty, one of my favorite book titles of all time.
Did you name that? Did you name what that? I don't think it did well in the States, did it? It was like more of a Japan.
Konnichiwa, Mr. Fatty would be a better seller, I think, in the US.
Well, I remember when I moved here around 2003, I think it came out in like 2005 or something. It's all mixed together in my head with like Train Man and all of that stuff.
Yeah, that kind of post-Evangelion kind of mainstreaming of otaku. And a lot of people wrote books about these otaku waves. Or I remember our friend Slasher co-wrote a book called, you know, Hating the Otaku Wave. Otaku is dead. Otaku is this. Otaku is that. There was kind of a publishing industry. My own book, right? Otaku in USA was part
yes,
of that.
Yes, definitely. Definitely it's part of that. So Okada published in 2008 a book called Otaku wa Sude ni Shinderu, or which is a play on that classic Fist of the North Star line, you know.
You are already
dead. Otaku are already dead. And in this book, he declared that he was done with otaku altogether, that he was hanging up his crown. He famously used to call himself the Ota King. And I don't know that now he's podcasting more than ever. Like he has a hugely popular podcast series that's touching on otaku topics. So I think his hanging up the crown was a little bit dramatic. But he posits that there were three, and this is as of 2008, which is already 15 years ago. But at that point, he posited that there were three eras of otaku in Japan. The first, what he called otaku aristocrats, who were early adopters from the late 70s and early 80s, who felt the need to convert their friends to the otaku lifestyle. That's basically the kind of people who you see in Otaku no Video. Remember that one?
Yeah, isn't there also a joke about the otaku aristocrats? It's really long and like really filthy and, you know, we'll get in trouble if we say it. But the punchline is the otaku aristocrats.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think there's probably a little bit of willful, a little wishful thinking. You know, it wasn't like, you know, Char Aznable was an aristocrat. There were a lot of aristocrats in early anime too, like
Dessler.
Castle Cagliostro, Dessler. Yes. So anyway, he says the first generation are otaku aristocrats.
King Zarkon and Prince Lotor, or they're royalty, pardon me.
You know, it's always about the haves and the have-nots for those early otaku. So those are the otaku aristocrats. Then he says that from the late 80s through the late 90s, you had the otaku elite. And these were fans who spurned and scorned anyone without the good sense to share their own personal taste in entertainment.
I feel seen, Matt, okay?
Exactly. And then that self-centered attitude reached its apex in the aughts with moe otaku, who are purveyors and consumers of anime, comics, and video games that hyper-focus on the misadventures of young girls rather than plot lines. Ooh, burn. So he kind of splits it up that way, and he basically says that he feels that the original otaku from the 80s were individuals who chose to pursue childish hobbies as a means to intellectually and emotionally isolate themselves from society, whereas particularly with moe otaku, but also after, he calls them a growing ghetto, there's that word again, of weak individuals who blame society when others fail to understand their personal interests.
Again, Matt, I feel seen.
So,
although I don't watch moe anime.
Do you, wait a second, you're blaming society for failing to understand your love for Jet Jaguar? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm like that dying punk rocker in Repo Man. I blame society.
So, you know, Okada dealt with this by basically shunning, you know, young otaku, but now he started his own old school otaku podcast, kind of like us. So actually, maybe this podcast is the answer to this question. What do you do when you are an old otaku? You launch a podcast and start talking about old otaku stuff.
And a blog, and a Patreon, and a YouTube channel, and a TikTok channel.
And pay me. Yes, it is. Maybe it's just the way of the world these days.
Are we just making content, Matt? Is that all it is now? Whatever happened to that warm, fuzzy feeling you got when you saw Bambi for the first time, Matt?
That you lost that love and feeling when you look at furry animals or furry anthropomorphic animals. That's the key. It's not that furries are into animals. They're into anthropomorphic animals, I believe. So I was told. I don't have a fursuit hanging in my closet. Not yet, anyway. So, you know, I don't feel any, you know, shame or need to abandon, you know, the mistakes of my youth, so to speak. You know, the things I watch. What about you? I mean, are you mainly watching kind of like old school stuff that you are nostalgic for? Or are you spicing it up with new stuff too? Like, how do you consume anime and manga these days?
For so many years, there were so many things I wanted to see or always had to like bug someone with a video rental card here in Japan so I could see it. But now like literally everything is available for streaming or, you know, on Amazon Prime here or whatever. You can see everything finally. So it's kind of like too much because then you get sort of used to it. You don't necessarily say, okay, I'm going to watch all of this. I'm going to watch all of Galvion. This is all Galvion all the time.
Right.
I don't really do that. But a lot of new anime sneaks into my radar because of my living situation. So I've been watching Demon Slayer, Oshinoko, which is like one of the new anime.
Oh, right.
I've been catching up on like My Hero Academia, which I skipped out on for a long time.
Right.
So I'm exposed to like all the kind of big hit Shonen Jumpy kind of products because all the kids here watch them. Okay. Basically like to be culturally literate in Japan is like as a kid, you have to watch that stuff by osmosis. It's seeping into my brain as well.
Living in Japan, like I kind of not out of any otaku need, but just simply living here, like I feel the need to watch certain new series because otherwise you'll kind of be left out of the conversation. You know, like Demon Slayer was one of those. Like all of Japan was wrapped up in watching Demon Slayer. I am not a huge Demon Slayer fan. I have to say there are moments watching that where I really had to force my way through, but I kind of felt it was necessary because it's, you know, like I said, part of the dialogue here. Chainsaw Man, like, you know, jump stuff, like all of this stuff is really heavily watched. So, but it's, I think this is the biggest difference between back then, you know, back in the day and now, which is that otaku used to be like an anime and manga were an underground thing. And now they're very much above ground. Like they are huge industries. They're actually kind of beloved cultural exports in Japan and consumed that way abroad too. So
how can we cash in on this whole anime thing, Matt?
Money making. Yeah, exactly, Patrick. You know, I think we need to launch another podcast. No, I'm just kidding. I think I have my hands full with this one. I guess it's the nerds won. Is that the takeaway here? It's hip to be square.
Yeah, I don't know where it goes next. There's been so much growth in the last couple of years, just in terms of the money coming into the industry and the amount of content being produced. The sky's the limit, man. I mean, this content is so mainstream now. I have so many like friends and relatives back in America who are like, yeah, my kid really loves anime. They really love Demon Slayer. They really, and I'm like, what? Really?
When I was in the States, and this is probably a discussion for another time, but I just, Hiroko and I went to the States for 3 weeks. We just got back a couple days ago for some family stuff. There was like a wedding, and then we took a little vacation, and we crisscrossed East Coast, Midwest, West Coast. We started in the DC area, went to Wisconsin, Seattle, and like the number of young people wearing either anime or Sanrio or kind of like kawaii adjacent type stuff, wearing shirts or having bags or like accessories, it was crazy. I was just like, wow, is like every person under the age of 20 like an otaku now? I mean, it was really, really, really impressive from a certain standpoint. And then I was seeing all sorts of like Japan inflected things, even in like, I went to my old alma mater in University of Wisconsin, Madison, and we're walking around the campus and there's all this like super cute, like Japanese style imagery and like tons of anime stuff. And I was just really blown away by it. Have you been to the States recently to see any of this? It's pretty interesting.
No, I haven't been back since I left, and I want to keep it that way. I don't want to leave my stereo. I don't want to leave my whiskey, Matt. I can't take it with me.
Can I tell you, like, I do love going back to visit family and friends. Hi, Hilsey. But it is not getting any easier to deal with that jet lag. It's a real bummer. This is the real problem of being an old otaku.
Didn't Danny Glover say this best in Predator 2? I'm getting too old for this shit.
The best of the Predator franchise? Anyway, so in a nutshell, we're old, but we still love anime and manga, and that's okay. I'm okay, you're okay. But I'd like to hear from other people in our studio audience. You know, as you age, how have your, you know, consumption patterns with regards to anime and manga and like tokusatsu changed? You know, we actually have things made for our demographic now, like Shin Kamen Rider and Shin Godzilla and all of that, and like
Yamato 2199.
Yamato 2199. So there is anime that is actually made for a middle-aged and up demographic. That's another big difference. But
and there's also goods, right? Like they have those Go Nagai super robot walking canes. Have you seen those?
Yes, yes.
It came out a few years ago.
I am positive we're going to see, we are absolutely going to see like anime themed like incontinence products coming out soon. Patent pending. That's where our money is. We should be making anime themed geriatric goods for the upcoming wave. Isn't Japan like the agingest society on the planet right now?
Voltron adult diapers and stuff like that. Is that what you mean?
I'm wearing those if they come out. I promise. All of my friends tend to really be people who are, you know, in the industry. I am the industry, as Rachel the Replicant said in Blade Runner. Like they're either like writers or critics or like filmmakers or music makers or whoopee makers. I don't know, what have you. I don't actually know many people who simply and quietly consume anime and manga because they like it. And it's like a kind of, you know, a hobby for them and not like they're the only way they have to live. So please share.
The cooks are very entertaining as well as very personable.
The prices are great.
I've eaten here 14 times and it's really exciting. I love the food.
I've never been entertained and served such good food at one time.
I'm really enjoying the atmosphere here.
The other people at the table make it so much fun.
I've never eaten here before, but it is really great and I really enjoy it. It's very entertaining.
The portions are huge. You never leave hungry.
North Alabama's choice for fine Japanese cuisine, Shogun Japanese Steakhouse on University Drive.
Well, that was quite an episode, Patrick. How do you feel?
Old and useless, Matt.
Our next episode is going to be all about incontinence products for otaku.
We'll be trying out the new super robot walking canes.
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. I actually just did kind of some rough demographic kind of analysis of my blog and it's newsletter. And it all seems to be 40 to 50 something, you know, men and women. And I'm just like, oh, man, I'm not hip anymore. Although it's hip to be square. I love my old otaku fans because I'm one of them.
Yeah, so we can always go on TikTok and like dance and point at things. It seems like it's a lot easier than just jabberjawing and trying to write stuff.
Is there an elder talk that I can join? I can be like, how do I use this thing?
I've fallen and I can't get up. We need to recreate that video inside of Mandarake, like as soon as possible. The lifeguard alarm.
Is that like when you hit, is it like, it looks like Ultraman's timer. It starts flashing on your chest when you fall.
It's like a Henshin belt.
Exactly. I've fallen and I can't get up pendant. It has to be a like one of those belts. Maybe when you fall, the wind drives the turbine in the belt and that calls the police or the ambulance? Is that how it works?
You transform into a Henshin cyborg or something like that?
I'm patenting this. I'm patenting all of this. I want to get all those nickels like I do when every time you press the Alt key on your keyboard.
And on that note, wanted to thank everyone for listening and supporting our show, and we'll keep producing it as long as you're there on the other side. So we'll see you next time.
See ya.